This is September 15th, 2013, and today we're going to investigate a koan. This is from the book of collection called the Shoyo Roku in Japanese, the Book of Serenity. It's usually translated as. And here's how it goes. It's called Dizang Plants the Rice Field. Dizang asked Shushan Shu, "Where have you come from?" Shushan Shu replied, "From the south." Dizang said, "How is Buddhism in the south these days?" Shushan said, "It is widely discussed." Dizang said, "How can that compare to my planting the fields and growing rice to eat?" Shushan said, "How can you save the beings of the three worlds that way?" Dizang said, "What is it that you call the three worlds?" That's the end. And some biographical material on these two guys. First, this Dizang, who's also known as Lohan. These, of course, are all Chinese. These are Chinese characters. Both became, the first one was a master. Dizang was a master, and the second one became one later. So Dizang lived in the great Tang Dynasty, lived in from the 9th to 10th centuries. I'm just skimming here from this great source of biographical material on the masters called Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. And I'm reading from the from his introduction here, Andy Ferguson's introduction. Classical records say that from early childhood he could speak very well and would not eat meat. At first he closely followed the teachings of the Vinaya. The Vinaya is in ancient China was a huge sect or school of Buddhism that emphasized the study and mastery of the monastic rules and regulations and the moral precepts. Hasn't made its way yet to the West, to the Americas or Europe that I'm aware of, but quite a few of the masters that we know about from China did start out in the Vinaya. It's the precepts are the foundation of practice. We can't really get very far as long as we are causing harm to others and to ourselves. We can't really go very far on this path of practice and enlightenment. So first he began the Vinaya, but later declared that just guarding against breaking the vows and adhering to the precepts did not equal true renunciation. Yes, this is the other side of it, that it's maybe the foundation, but if we just limited practice to doing good and avoiding evil, then there wouldn't be much to the Dharma. He then set off to explore the teachings of a Zen school. He first trained under Xue Feng, very famous Chinese master, but didn't get very far. And then it was Xue Feng's disciple, Xuansha, who is said to have brought Dizang to full awakening. The records give us this dialogue, this exchange between Dizang and his teacher at the time. And it says here, this left Dizang's doubts erased. other words, that he came to enlightenment as a result of this, in this exchange. So here it is. Xuanzha questioned Dizong. Dizong now is just a monk, hasn't yet come to awakening. And Xuanzha says, in the three realms there is only mind. How do you understand this? Dizong pointed to a chair and said, what does the master call that? And the master said, a chair. Dizong said, then the master can't say that in the three worlds there is only mind. See here, he's getting caught in the literal here, thinking, separating mind from things. This is fundamental delusion, to think that there are things out there and then there's a mind in here. Then the master can't say that in the three worlds there is only mind. And then Xuanzha, the master, said, I say that it is made from bamboo and wood. What do you say it's made from? Dizong said, I also say it's made from bamboo and wood. Xuanzha said, I've searched across the great earth for a person who understands the Buddha Dharma, but I haven't found one. Now this is unusual. This dialogue is unusual in that it's not at all, there's nothing explicitly here that says, there's no, you know, penny dropping at the end of this dialogue. There's no obvious sign that the young Dizong was brought to awakening through this. But it's still an interesting dialogue. These are like ships passing through the night. Dizong is still on the level of the literal or the material. So he can say, okay, I say it's made from bamboo and wood. Xuanzha has seen what's beyond names and forms. He's awakened to the true nature of things. But that doesn't mean he still can't say it's made from bamboo and wood. It's that, like that old saying in Zen, in the beginning of practice, mountains are mountains and rivers are rivers. Later, mountains are no longer mountains and rivers are no longer rivers. And then finally, mountains are mountains, rivers are rivers. Xuanzha, the master here, has reached that third stage. He can say, it's made from bamboo and wood. Dizong is at the first of those three stages. Yeah, it's made from bamboo and wood. Here's another one. Dizong entered the hall. Now here he's, now Dizong is the master. This is, must have been years later. And addressed the monks, saying, if you want to come face to face with the essential mystery of our order, here it is. There's no other special thing. If it is something else, then bring it forth and let's see it. If you can't show it, then forget about it. He's speaking out of his, of course, out of his deep understanding that there is just this. No past, no future. No there and then. Just this. Here. What else is there? Show it to me, Dizong says. Where is it? This relates very closely to the koan that we're looking at today. Here's another exchange. A monk asked Dizong, what is Dizong's house style? House style would be a way that in Zen, in Asian Zen, you would refer to his style of teaching or the style of practice and training. You learn when you've been in Zen long enough that different temples, monasteries, Zen centers have different styles, different ways of presenting the Dharma. And this is only natural. The challenge when you go to a temple or monastery or center that's different than your own is accommodating to that. And it can be a little difficult. You, the longer you've spent at one temple or center, the more natural it seems that that's the way of doing things, the way of bowing, the way of speaking or not speaking. And then you come to another place and things are a little different. And then if you could just relax and just move along with the way things are at the other temple, then it becomes simple enough. The problem comes when you cling to what you're used to. So the values of doing a pilgrimage, you have to learn to adapt. What could be more important than that in life generally? But anyway, back to this first question. What is Dizong's house style? Dizong said, I can't tell you. The monk said, why not? Dizong said, because it's my house style. Here's another one. Dizong saw a monk approach. He held up his whisk. Whisk is one of the implements of the teacher's authority in Asian Zen, and still I use one of these horsehair whisks in ceremonies, but I just limit it to that. They had them ready all the time to, partly in the warmer weather, to sweep away the flies, I read. So he held up his whisk and said, do you understand? The monk said, thank you for your compassionate instruction, master. Dizong said, you see me raise the whisk and you say I'm instructing you. When you see the mountains and rivers each day, don't they instruct you? Another time, Dizong saw a monk approaching and held up his whisk. The monk shouted in praise and bowed. Dizong said, when you saw me raise the whisk, you bowed and shouted. Why is it that when someone holds up a broom, you don't shout in praise? He's making a serious point behind what seems a little bit teasing. That everything is teaching. If we have the eyes to see it, the ears to hear it, then everything, all phenomena we encounter in our daily lives, everything is equally teaching the Dharma. Including the silence. Here's another. Dizong asked a monk, where do you come? From where do you come? The monk said, from Zhuzhou. Must be a city or a province in China. Dizong said, what did you bring with you? The monk said, I didn't bring anything with me. Dizong said, why are you deceiving people? To which the monk remained silent. This is like when a new practitioner who's been sitting for a couple weeks or a couple months says to me, "Induk-san, oh, I don't have any thoughts at all when I'm sitting. Things are really, it's really going well. There's no thoughts in the mind." This is a tip off that they're missing a lot. I didn't bring anything with me. Oh, really? What is a more promising sign is when someone comes in and says, "Oh my God, I can't believe how many thoughts I have." There's a phrase that I heard about in Tibetan Buddhism called the stage of cascading thoughts. It applies in Zen too. This stage of cascading thoughts, I would say, is not the first stage of practice. It's when you start to become aware of the commotion in the mind. When you start for the first time to become aware of what's going on in your mind, that you can feel humbled by the tumult. Tumult that we were never aware of earlier, because we had so little awareness before that. This is why the Sesshin, especially the early stage of Sesshin, well, not especially, it could be any stage of Sesshin, maybe more the middle of Sesshin, when we feel that we're starting to get more concentrated, and then we find that we still get snagged by our thoughts. Here's one last one involving Dizang. He once traveled to the provincial capital with Bao Fu and Chang Qing. These must have been senior monks or even masters. So three very seasoned practitioners. They saw some discarded peonies by the road. And then each weighs in on it. Bao Fu said, "What a wonderful bunch of flowers." Chang Qing said, "I've never seen such flowers." Now be careful. That probably means more than, "Yeah, wow, what a bunch of flowers. I've never seen such flowers." One of the great subjects of calligraphy in Zen is from the very beginning there has never been a single thing. This is the core experience in Buddhism. It's hard to even elaborate on it. From the very beginning, there has never been a single thing. This is the shunyata, the emptiness of all things. That the appearances, this world, in this world of appearances, there are infinite numbers of things. And yet, all of these things are fundamentally, in their essence, empty. No thing. So let's do these three again. What a wonderful bunch of flowers. And then the next guy, "I've never seen such flowers." And then Lohan gets the last word. "Too bad. It's a bunch of flowers." This is why these these mondo, these dharma duels in Zen, that all these koans are so fascinating, because you can take either side. There are these two sides of reality. From the one side is the world of relativity or differentiation, the world of phenomena, of thingness, of change, and that's half of the truth. From the other side, there are no things, no change, no time, no space. Everything is empty, unmoving, resolved, beyond coming and going. And then that's enough for Dizong. And then the other guy in this koan, today's koan, Shushan. Of course, my pronunciation of Chinese names is always only an approximation. This Shushan, of course, was a disciple of Dizong, and a Dharma brother of the great Fa Yen. According to the records, Shushan's spiritual attainment was comparable with that of Fa Yen, and these two friends set off together from Dizong's temple on a pilgrimage. Talking as they traveled, Fa Yen suddenly asked Shushan a question, saying, "The ancients said that the single body is revealed in the 10,000 forms. Did they thus dispel the 10,000 forms or not?" Shushan said, "No, they didn't dispel them." Fa Yen said, What do you say dispels or doesn't dispel them?" Shushan was confused and returned to see Dizong. Dizong asked him, "You haven't been gone long. Why have you come back?" Shushan said, "There's an unresolved matter, so I'm not willing to go traveling to mountains and rivers until it's resolved." Wait, let's just go back to that question. That this one body is revealed in the 10,000 forms. This one is revealed in the many. All of this is very much to the point of today's koan, but this is a different koan here, a different story that became a koan. And then again, Fa Yen asked them. First, he says it doesn't dispel them, that this one body, this one, does not negate the many. And Fa Yen then asks, "Well, what dispels or doesn't dispel them? What is it? What is the basis of whether the one negates the many or not?" And that's what left him stymied. And then Dizong said, "It's not bad that you travel to difficult mountains and rivers." But Shushan didn't understand Dizong's meaning, so he asked, "The single body is revealed in the 10,000 forms. What does this mean?" Dizong said, "Do you say the ancients dispelled the 10,000 forms or not?" Shushan said, "They didn't dispel them." Dizong said, "That's two." T-W-O. For a time, Shushan was lost in thought. That's a clue as to where he's at. And then he said, "I don't know whether the ancients dispelled the 10,000 forms or not." Dizong said, "What is it you call the 10,000 forms?" That's almost exactly the punchline of today's koan, which has Dizong saying, "What is it that you call the three worlds?" Here he says, "What is it you call the 10,000 forms?" Exactly the same, really. And at that, Shushan came to awakening. Again, another one here, similar to today's. A monk asked, "How can one get out of the three realms?" Shushan said, "When the three..." Now, this is Shushan the master. In today's koan, he's the younger one. "How can one get out of the three realms?" Shushan said, "When the three realms become one, then you escape them." The monk said, "If not the three realms, what is it?" And Shushan said, "Where is a place that isn't of the three realms?" Let's look at this phrase, the three realms. Usually, that refers to these three ways of understanding reality. Three realms sometimes are called. In Buddhist texts, were everywhere in India, in China, Tibet, Japan. They love these designations, these numerical categories, and this is one of the best known. So the three realms usually means the world of desire, or the realm of desire, the realm of form, and the realm of formlessness. And to get into what those mean would take us too far afield with the time passing now. In the time we have this morning. But it's just three ways of looking at what is not three, but is one. Sometimes the three worlds or the three realms refers to past, present, and future, but usually in Buddhist texts it means the world of desire, the world of form, and the world of formlessness. So now let's get back to the matter at hand here. This koan number 12 in the Shoyoroku, the Book of Serenity. Dizong asked Shushan Shu, "Where have you come from?" This is a very common opening challenge when a monk would come to a master. Where have you come from? And Shushan replied, "From the south." Simple, ordinary way of taking the question. Came from Washington. Came from Kansas City. Now, once, if Shushan had realized that in the ultimate sense there is no coming or going, there's nowhere from which we've come and there is nowhere we're going, this is the essential or the empty side, the absolute side of reality, that half, then you could very well say, "I came from Kansas City," or "I came from Germany." It's just like that dialogue where the master was saying, "It's made of bamboo and wood. The chair is made of bamboo and wood." He has seen there. He had seen what is beyond names and forms and types of wood. He's seen into what is beyond all of that. And so, sure, why not say it's made of bamboo and wood? And he was speaking with the monk who had not seen through all that. And so his saying, the young monk saying it's made of bamboo and wood, was a very different vantage point. "Where have you come from?" "From the south." Okay, Dizong said, "How is Buddhism in the South these days?" Shushan said, "It is widely discussed." Always the challenge of when we're working on these koans is to get beyond the words to what is behind the words, the understanding or lack of understanding behind the words, the level of understanding, the depth of experience, or lack of experience out of which these words issue. It is widely discussed. Okay, now he has revealed his immaturity in terms of practice. Not lack of sincerity. He became a master, so he had great potential, must have had, and a need to understand. But at this point, the best he can say is, it's widely discussed. Yeah, we talk a lot about the three worlds and the Noble Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths and the precepts and so forth. And then Dizong said, how can that compare to my planting the fields and growing rice to eat? One of the common English translations for practice, Zen practice, is cultivation. It's really a very good word. We're cultivating when we're sitting and when we're maintaining our practice and activity, remaining vigilant, aware of what's going on in the mind, aware of what's going on around us. This would be cultivation, practice in that sense. The word practice, of course, has different meanings, but this is the broad meaning of not just repetition. Practice is something we do, like practicing the piano, but working on ourselves. Through others. So Dizong, of course, is saying, how can your talking about the Dharma compare to my practicing it? But Shushan misses the point, and in his mind, the speaking about these lofty concepts of oneness and differentiation and enlightenment and so forth—that's the real work. And what? Planting the fields, mowing the lawn, shoveling snow, driving to work, driving home from work, changing diapers. What's that? It's a profound level of misunderstanding. And so he says, well, how can you save the beings of the three worlds that way? The beings of the three worlds is just a way of saying, how can you liberate all sentient beings? Here we always prefer the word liberate to save. There's something Christian about the word save. Liberating is saving in a way, but we choose. In our own version of the four vows, we say liberate. His questioning has been kindled, his doubt. Wait a minute. You're a master? And you're telling me that our discussions of the Dharma can't compare to your hoeing, weeding, harvesting, How can you liberate the beings of the three worlds that way? It's an allusion to the first of the four vows that we'll actually be doing in a few minutes. All beings without number I vow to liberate. This is a vow that many people are confused about. The question often comes is, how can I vow to liberate other beings until I've liberated myself? It's a fair question, but it presupposes that there are other beings apart from oneself. This is the problem with words. Words, of course, have their use. We use them all the time, but reinforce this one side that of differentiation, of differences, and reinforce the idea that that's all there is. There's the self, and then there are others. And that's half the truth, yes. Last week we had a local primary election, and it was quite a stunning upset by lovely Warren. In the mayoral race, her opponent, Democratic opponent, again, this is the primary, Tom Richards, had been shown in the polls right before Election Day, had been shown to be way ahead. The one I heard was he was predicted to get 63% of the vote. And he lost. And he lost by a sizable margin. Lovely Warren won quite easily. And one of the explanations I heard offered was that people who heard that the Richards, those who would have voted for Tom Richards, when they heard the polls being so lopsided and him being so far ahead, they decided to stay home. So we could say that the thought process went something like this: well, all those other people are going to be voting for him. Why do I need to? What's one vote? May have been other. Certainly, one of the reasons is that lovely Warren, I heard, worked a lot harder to get out the vote of her supporters. But I use this as an example, and this is sort of what got me onto this topic today, onto this koan. That it's the same underlying delusion, is that there are others out there apart from me. There are other votes that are going to be sufficient, and who needs mine? Here are some other forms of that delusion. Finishing a bottle of soda when you're driving and chucking the bottle, the empty plastic bottle, out the window. Well, it's only one bottle. Or with any trash. It works the other way. Walking along and seeing that plastic bottle on the sidewalk and right away just thinking, well, with all the trash in this city, what good would it do for me to pick up that bottle and put it away? Same mistake. The mistake is not seeing oneself as the world, or cutting the corner across a lawn. It's just one person. It's just me cutting across the lawn. That lawn that owner has worked at to maintain. But yeah, it's one person, and that person is everyone looked at from this essential point of view. Hakuin put it very simply, I am the sun and the moon and the stars and the wide, wide earth. Or John Muir, the great naturalist, when we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything in the universe. I just want to encourage people who are walking along and find a, not any kind of trash, but a clean, just a, unless you have gloves on and a bag with you, a trash bag with you, to just bend down and pick up that piece of trash, that plastic bag that's blowing around, or the plastic bottle. You don't want to have to carry that bottle or trash for blocks and blocks before getting rid of it, but if you think that there's some way of depositing it, getting rid of it, and if not far ahead of you, then why not? This coming Saturday, as I think most of you know, this coming Saturday there's going to be a what we're calling an Earth Vigil in downtown Rochester, where people in our Sangha will be sitting to demonstrate their concern about the environment, about climate change, and in particular, concern about the denial of it, let me put it this way, the concern about how little coverage there is in the media about this looming disaster. People will be sitting in front of the Gannett building. This is a big publishing corporation that has some, 83 newspapers and other. It publishes the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, and we chose, in our little committee, chose that site as the place to make a statement. Unfortunately, I'll not be here this coming weekend. I committed months ago to leading a sesshin, a little weekend sesshin in Cleveland, but there too, one might easily think, okay, what good is that going to do? Just sitting there, how many people are going to get? 10, 20, 50 at the most, or maybe 100? We've invited every other meditation and prayer group, every other contemplative group in the area that we could think of, other Buddhist groups and Quaker group and others to join us. What good is one person? Why should I do that? Oh, there'll be others. There'll be others who are doing it, and maybe it'll affect a few people who see it. How can you liberate the beings of the three worlds? How can you do anything about the environment? Just yourself sitting there, one person. Dogen would have this answer. When even just one person at one time sits in Zazen, he becomes imperceptibly one with each and all the myriad things and permeates completely all time, so that within the limitless universe, throughout past, future, and present, he is performing the eternal and ceaseless work of guiding beings to enlightenment. It doesn't have to be just in the sitting posture that we do this most essential work of liberating all beings. It's whenever we can refrain from trafficking in thought, whenever we can keep ourselves free of this cloud of thoughts that otherwise is in our mind most of the time. Zazen is just the Zazen posture, the formal meditation posture, is a way that we can maintain this concentration, this no-mindedness most easily once we get used to the postures. We can do it all the time. When we're driving, when we're mowing the lawn, when we're taking out the trash, when we're picking up the trash from the sidewalk, this is performing the eternal and ceaseless work of guiding beings to enlightenment, so long as we're not thinking about it. Certainly, so long as we're not thinking with pride about our guiding beings to enlightenment as we're doing it. But without thought of self or other, that's really implied in what he says in our sitting. How can you liberate the beings of the three worlds that way? And then Dizong gets the final word. What is it that you call the three worlds? What is it you imagine? What world is there outside of this one? The Buddha. The myth about the Buddha, when he was first born, they took seven steps, raised up his right hand and pointed to the earth with his left hand, and he said, above the heavens and below the heavens, I alone, the world-honored one. Alone. No other. No other world. No other time. No other place. No other beings. Just this one, alone. Divide it in two and you've got all one. This is samadhi, where subject and object, self and others, us and them, now and then, before and after, coming and going, merge. They merge. And we go beyond oneness to no thingness. No thing apart from any other thing. That's really what that primary statement means that I mentioned earlier. From the very beginning, there has never been a single thing. There is no thing apart from any other thing. Every action we take, whether we're sitting to make a statement of concern about the environment, or we're doing anything else, it is all just this one. Our time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.